Hey, Freight Tribe. Today's episode, we talk with Ryan Schreiber, truly one of the great connectors in logistics and transportation. So who better to talk to us about the power of intentionally networking? He also shares some great personal insights on how to develop a growth mindset and the importance of paying attention to the customer experience. All right, let's get into it. And thank you so much for listening. Let's go. Hello, and welcome to the Logistics and Transportation Experience with Jamin. Today, I'm fired up every day, but particularly fired up to have a friend on, Ryan Schreiber. He's an experienced Renaissance man of freight, advocate for the future, transformation evangelist. I had to look this one up. Believer in conversational UI, a successful serial entrepreneur in logistics, meaning he's done a wide range of things and crushed it. We look forward to hearing about that. A Juris Doctor magna cum laude law from Michigan State Law School. And last but not least, the father of cats. I now give you the pride of a Tampa prep school, Ryan Schreiber. Welcome.
Thanks, dude. I love the name of the podcast. It reminds me of this Michael Vick commercial from like the late 90s. Do you remember that one? It was like a Nike commercial.
Yeah.
Michael Vick experience. And like I love that name anyway.
Thanks.
Anybody who's watching this who hasn't seen it, go Google that. It's one of the best commercials of all time.
Vick is such a beast. I think he's wildly underappreciated. Obviously, he had the little dog issue, but.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I agree. He definitely changed the game in a lot of ways. And being a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, I had to see him twice a year, but the Bucs always handled him, so it was fine.
Yeah, you got yours in 2002. You got you a ring.
I was there, too. I was in San Diego. It was awesome. It was one of the best.
That's rad. I'm a huge Keyshawn Johnson fan, so I was rooting for the Bucs.
Just give me the damn ball.
Yeah.
That's my philosophy on life, too. We could actually end this podcast right now. That's my philosophy. Just give me the damn ball.
You guys have similar swagger. You go out and get it and make it happen. And you know, Ryan, that's why I'm fired up to have you on, because as you probably heard me say it a lot on this podcast, I want to focus on adapt and thrive, right? So there's a lot of people out there covering the tactical side of logistics and transportation, and they do it very well. I want to get in your mind. You've been successful at a lot of different stops. You've done a lot of different things. So the questions I've put together here are, honestly, they're selfish questions, ones that I want to know the answer to try to help my mindset, see what I could borrow from you, copy from you, or just to stink and motivate me. First, let's get to know you as the kid a little bit. Let's take it way back. Where'd you grow up?
Born and raised in Tampa, Florida. So I lived in Tampa, Florida from birth until I graduated college. And then I struck out and moved to the Midwest. And I'm actually about to move back to the south here in a couple weeks. I'm moving to Texas with my wife because she hates winter. So
hey, nice. What part of Texas?
We're moving to San Antonio. That's where my wife's originally from. So you know what they say, happy wife, happy life, right?
Hey, I cannot argue with that. That's awesome. Your cats aren't going to hate that either.
No, they're going to love it.
Favorite toy as a kid?
Favorite toy? I don't know. Like probably basketball. We played basketball a lot growing up, like just me and my friends. We would just go to the park and play basketball all day. So it's not like, I mean, you know, it's not a Power Ranger or anything like that. Although I remember, you know, Power Rangers were big when I was a kid, but hooping is probably the thing that I remember the most, just like doing all day, every day growing up.
When's the last time you shot a basketball?
Oh, it's been somebody brought this up the other day. It has been a couple of years since I've actually played basketball. Like, first day of college through the end of law school, 7 straight years. I played basketball like on average 6 days a week. And then since then, in the 12 years since I graduated law school, I've played basketball like, I don't know, 10 times.
Man, got to go pick up a ball. I got to say, like, I was in the same boat as you, and we started going to quarantine time, and I just started to try to stay sane. They just started shooting hoops again. I'm not great by any means, but it's so therapeutic just to fire up some jump shots.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the transition into the quarantine times was really interesting. I mean, I went from being on the road 70% of the time to being inside the four walls of my house 99% of the time. So I bought a bike to do exactly what you're talking about. I just like ride my bike around a little bit and clear my mind, and it's fun.
Talk to me about that. You you're a road dog, a road warrior, however you want to put it. You were someone that was going to all the shows, going to visit all the different brokerages and transportation companies around the country. What was it like going from 100 miles an hour to zero?
I don't think I ever got to zero. You know, I think that, you know, adapt and thrive, like, very quickly. Everything happened very quickly. And I asked myself, how do I take, you know, I have no control over what's going on in the broader economy, what's going on with the health and welfare of people. So very quickly, I focused in on, like, what can I do? What can I do that is going to make a difference for me and for the people with whom I have relationships? And so, you know, I certainly, like, our business, my business dried up really, really quickly, but I focused in on, and my efforts in on, connecting people, which is, I think, something that is my superpower. So I started doing, like, weekly calls with clients, or bringing my clients together so that they could share what's going on with them and the best practices that they had kind of sourced through the whole COVID shutdown, early phase shutdown. I participated with other organizations to be the voice of trucking and transportation to shippers about, you know, hey, here's what's going on with drivers, and, you know, they're facing food insecurity. So, you know, it was just really, it was a quick turn, but I don't think I ever went to zero.
Yeah, you just took a different way to connect with people. I like that a lot. When, you know, you mentioned it happened suddenly, and I think for all of us, and you walked us through your thought process, is that something you internalize and kind of have that internal conversation, or does it come naturally to you to just pivot and act?
Most things don't start out as natural. You know, your whole podcast is around mindset. And anybody who's listened to anything else that I do has heard me talk about having a learner mindset or having a growth mindset. That's not my natural state of being. You know, as a human being, like, when I was born, you know, nature versus nurture, but certainly, like, as I grew up, I was a very negative person, and I had a very fixed mindset. And, you know, it's natural in people like me who are very passionate and very driven. And I had to learn to challenge myself to have a growth mindset, to have a learner mindset, to come into every situation wanting to learn. And so I think the same thing is true here. Like, I certainly, now it's intuitive and natural for me, but I probably at some point in my life, I had to learn how to say, okay, how do I take control of this situation to the extent that I can? Because I can't control everything. A, what can I control so I can focus on those things? And B, how do I have an impact on those things as much as I can? And then maybe the third part is, like, what can I learn from this?
I like that. So was there a moment, either growing up or in your professional life, where you sort of drew a line or like, hey, I got to snap out of this fixed mindset over into what you describe as a learner and growth mindset?
You know what? There was. It was probably 2013 or 14. And I used to jokingly just kind of say, I was building a brokerage. I had started this brokerage as a sister company to a food distribution company. And I was growing the brokerage, and I just was so stressed. I mean, every day was stressful. Like, it, you know, just trying to figure out how to grow a brokerage and how to deal with the human problems. And whenever people would ask me how I was doing, I would always jokingly say, you know, everything's terrible all the time. I would just say, and I would say it jokingly, tongue in cheek. But one day I kind of just stopped and thought to myself, like the universe, you know, the kind of the, not to get hokey about it, but the energy that I was putting out in the universe. And what that actually meant in tangible terms was, I was saying it so often that it was something I thought about all the time. I thought about being able to say it. And so there was the undercurrent of so many things that I would say. And so I was like, I'm going to change this. I'm going to say something different. And then I started saying a quote from The Big Lebowski: everything's fine, dude. Nothing is fucked. So I would be like, people are like, how's everything? I'd be like, you know what? Everything's fine all the time and nothing is fucked. And it's transportation. Everything is fucked all the time, but I would say it. And it's amazing how quickly my stress level came down. And that was a real turning point for me in terms of how I realized the way that I think impacts the way that I feel. and I can have the control over the way that I feel by changing the way that I think. And it didn't happen over, like, you know, certainly, like, you know, you have to register. It's just like anything else. You have to practice it. Still today, I find myself being negative sometimes, and I have to stop myself. And that's all you can do is focus on improving, you know, incrementally. So yeah, there was that moment. I remember I was on the phone with one of my clients, and I remember who the client is. I'll maybe text him and tell him to listen to the podcast. Nobody here would know who he is.
Nice. Anyway. I like that. Yeah. The stories that we tell ourselves, the self-talk, it matters. I don't find that to be hokey at all. So would you have some checks and balances with yourself to regulate that self-talk, or when you catch yourself slipping, is there something you do to bring yourself back, or it's just such second nature now?
Another really great question. I do think it's probably second nature, but I think it's really hard to self-regulate for a lot of people, and particularly for somebody like me who thrives off of my emotion. I think that almost everything is a two-sided coin. It's your superpower in certain circumstances, and it holds you back in others. So for me, I think it's probably my family, my wife, like just having that relationship, you know, every day when I come home, I want to make sure that, or every time I talk to my wife, I do my best to like check in with myself to be like, am I going to be the husband that she deserves? And I'm not. Like I literally never am. My wife is amazing. She's the best. I'm the kind of person that I like tease my wife a lot, and she hears me kind of like tease her to other people a lot. So if she's ever home, she like hears me on the phone with like, oh, my wife did this silly thing. How funny. But I try and check in with myself to say like, am I bringing this to her? I'm trying to get better at doing it in the moment. But certainly like every day I have that touch point with myself, but it has, I mean, to your point, it's become a little bit ingrained in my mentality because I've gone through the reps, and I don't do it I'm not great at it every day, but I just try.
What is it that makes your wife so rad and that you respect and really those words you shared and the mentality is stinking beautiful.
Thanks, man.
What does she do that we can all borrow to kind of conjure up that sort of a respect?
When I first started dating my wife, I knew we were going to get married. My wife and I just had our 5-year wedding anniversary a couple weeks ago.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. We've been together for close to 10 years now, but I knew we were going to get married when we first started dating. And when somebody would ask me, what do you love about your wife? I would say that I'm never a person who has hesitated to express myself and be who I am and be comfortable with that to varying degrees. I would say that my wife made me more me than I had ever been before. And I think that's like the highest compliment that I can ever, she didn't change me.
Totally agree.
She just made me more me than I'd ever been before. And then one day I asked her after we've been married for a little while, why did you fall in love with me? And her answer was, because you are who you are and you don't care what anybody thinks about it. And certainly if I was like a serial killer and I didn't care what anybody thought about it, she probably wouldn't have given the same answer. Yeah. Although actually maybe my wife, cause she loves that true crime stuff, but like most people, you know, but I'm not perfect. And my wife knows that I'm not perfect, and she doesn't ask me to be perfect. She asks me to be me. And so like all the other things, her love, you know, her compassion, my wife is the most naturally good person I've ever met. I think most of us have to try to be good. My wife is naturally good.
Yeah, I certainly do.
It's the mix, you know, it's like a natural empathy that she has that just makes her good in her heart. Whereas like, I have to be like, am I making the right decision here? Above all other things, like that's why, you know, that's why, I mean, it's selfish, but my wife builds, is a foundational sort of piece of my personality at this point, because she just enables me to be me even more than I had ever been before.
Man, that's awesome. So how has her rock solid example helped you? You know, you've had a successful career, started and exited in various fashions.
Oh my God.
Different businesses. How has her example helped you be a leader in those different organizations?
My wife is the only reason that I've been able to do anything in my career. To your point too, around mentality from earlier, you know, when my wife and I first started dating, I had been starting and building a brokerage, and the owner of the company was just somebody that I had a really toxic working relationship with. And she helped me, like, not just from being there, she helped me recenter, you know, and think more long term and kind of like push it. But every step along the way, I have only been able to do what I am able to do because I know my wife has my back and I don't have to question it. And if I fail, I know that she's going to, like, you know, she's going to be there to, like, support me. You know, she's not going to criticize, you know, she's not going to be there to criticize me. She's not going to be there to, and in very tangible ways too. Like, look, I tried 2016, I left a brokerage and I tried to start an independent consulting business at the time. And I way overestimated how ready I was for that thing and the network that I had to do it. And like my wife had to kind of like, I mean, I made enough money to help us pay our bills, but my wife really shouldered the burden of our lives at that time. And like, didn't complain, like didn't yell at me and didn't, you know, call me a failure or at any day made me feel like a failure. You know, she loved me and she supported me and she just like, you know, she was very stoic in a manner of speaking through that time and, you know, enabled me to do all, to take the risks that I've taken and to try and to succeed and also to try and fail. I have failed at a lot of things in my life, in my career. And I you know, she always made that okay.
That's beautiful. A good ride or die is, irreplaceable.
Yeah, for sure.
So what advice in, so taking her example, you as a leader, what could we then as leaders of organizations, what can we borrow from that when we're dealing with our people or employees, whatever you want to call them, specifically during uncertain times?
So I guess very specifically there, just support each other. And what I've seen a lot in my career is that support is, and this is ties into my wife. My wife didn't like pat me on the back every day and tell me I was doing a good job. And she also didn't shit on me, which like was helpful. All of her, you know, everything that she, it was all of the other stuff and that her actions backed up any of the words that she may have spoken to me. So I think that's the one thing in terms of how you as a leader can kind of support your team. It's back it up and support people, you know, with your actions. And it's not the big actions, it's the little actions. It's the everyday, the every interaction actions. And be vulnerable, ask for help, ask your people for help, you know, openly communicate with them and be honest with them. But then as a leader between like, and then the other part is as a leader, build a support base for yourself of people that can help build you up and that can help support you because we're not all strong all the time and we're not all going to be right all the time and we're not all going to have easy decisions all the time. Build a support base of people that you can trust, that you can be vulnerable with, and that will support you when you make a bad call. You know, so that you don't feel like you're on in it all alone and you can't walk it back or whatever. You know, build yourself a personal board of directors, if you will.
Oh, I like that. Expound on that.
You know, companies have a board of directors to help them, you know, figure out sort of where they're going and to help challenge the way they're thinking about things. Yeah. You know, a board of directors is essentially like a place of accountability. I have to a CEO of business or what have you, I have to go to my board of directors and I have to say, here's what I want to do and here's why I want to do it. I can't just fly by the seat of my pants all the time. And they're there to suss out for you what you've thought through and what you haven't. They're there to kind of hold you accountable to the commitments you've made and not let you make excuses for yourself. They're there to empower and build you up and make connections for you, et cetera, right? And they're there to like, and they're there to kind of keep you honest with yourself and like tell you when you need to do better and push you. And I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, when you have mutual respect with people, like, look, I've failed. And like what drives me every day is not having to tell my wife I failed again, even though I know that I will. At some point I will have to go to my wife and say, sure. Like, look, I did this thing. And I thought it would work and it didn't work. And I know that I've said that before. I hope you still love me. And the same is true of a board of directors. It's like, when you have that mutual respect, you can go to them and say, look, this didn't work out the way that I thought it would. Let's figure out what to do next.
I love that. So from a super practical standpoint, someone's listening to this, it's clicking with them like, wow, whether I work for someone or I'm an entrepreneur, doesn't matter. I am, I'm Jamin Inc. You're Ryan. We're all our own businesses, if you will.
Everybody's a startup.
Yeah, that's such a...
I wanted to write that book. Like, think of yourself as a startup. And there's all of these lessons that come with startups. And it's not raise a bunch of venture capital, but I mean things like be close to your users and like iterate quickly.
Oh, yes.
You know, there's all of these lessons of startups that I think are really applicable to everyone's professional lives. So yeah, Jamin, you're Jamin Inc. and you're a startup. And you got to figure out how to bootstrap. Maybe eventually you've got to raise money for yourself, but like you're bootstrapping your professional life and you should think about it that way. So I apologize for cutting you off, but I agree with you, man.
That's such a fun way to look at it. So then what would be some practical steps? Now I'm like, okay, that idea of having my own personal board really resonates with me. How do I start that? How do I dig in and start that process and put together a Jamin Inc. board?
Talk to literally everyone. It doesn't matter if they're in your industry, if they're out of your industry, if they're older than you, if they're younger than you, in fact, it's better when they're not. It's better when, diversity means a lot of things. Diversity means diversity of skin color, and diversity means diversity of socioeconomic status. Diversity means diversity of gender. And diversity means diversity of age, of sexual orientation, of background, of experience. It means all of these things. And they are all valuable to your experience. It's because they can challenge your preconceived notions of all of the things that are set in stone. One of my favorite phrases is, nothing is impossible outside the physical limitations of the universe. Everything else is a problem to be solved. What I mean by that is like, if you want Jamin Inc. solve the time travel dilemma or solve the faster than light travel, solve faster than light travel, you probably can't do that because it's a physical limitation of the universe, but work backwards from the, and so all of these diversity can help you. So talk to everyone, talk to the janitor, talk to the people that you think, and most importantly, talk to the people whose opinions you think can't add anything to what you already know. Because those are the people that you can actually learn the most from, I think, because you've sort of like you've pushed their experience out of your mind, as an example. And that's the first step. Talk to everyone. And then, settle in on a core group of a few people who you can, who you feel like you can be the most vulnerable with, who you feel you communicate the best with, and who you feel like will challenge you, not tell you what you want to hear, but challenge you. And then set a regular cadence for checking in with those folks. Whether it's once a month or once a quarter or whatever it is, make sure you touch those people all the time, on a regular basis to hold, so that you can really drill in on those things that you want to improve and be better at.
Yeah. I love the idea of very intentional networking. And, that's something that you practice what you preach. You're very good at that. I think you described it before, your superpower being a connector. And I've been on the fortune receiving end of that. You've connected me with a lot of great people, and I'm appreciative for that. Is that ability to connect? I mean, in high school, were you connecting the jocks with the science folks? Is that something you've always had, or is that developed over time?
Yeah, I think I've always been a bit of a social butterfly, in that, like, in my heart, I'm a little bit of an introvert, in that I like to just like kind of be by myself and clear my own head, but. That's how I kind of recharge my batteries. But outside of that, I've always been somebody who wants to learn. And the best way to learn is to connect with different people and try. And the way that you connect with people is by finding commonality. And then I think you can just naturally extrapolate that to, hey, you're a jock and you're a science nerd, but like you both, for whatever reason, really like, I don't know, you both really like this, obscure cartoon or something, and like I don't like that thing, but the two of you guys like that thing, and that's pretty cool, and I don't know, I've never met anybody else who likes that thing. And I think that comes from having that just like desire to learn, which is a little bit different than having a learner mindset, but it comes from the desire to gather information, I guess is a better way to put it. So
I've heard you quoted as saying before, you know, well, let me back up. Something I've observed that has made you successful in my mind is just your sheer ability, love, and being a practitioner of hustle. Right? Hustle can be a real, real buzzword in the world, but you actually embody it and you have a lot of respect for people that do. And I'll never forget, I heard you one time say, I love hustle, but I'm not into hustle porn.
What I was wondering if that's where you were going with this. Yeah. I struggled early on in my career. I haven't always hustled. Like, you know, when I was growing up, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy. I was able to skate by on being slightly above average intelligence.
Sure.
And I mean, that was true in high school where I went to a pretty good school, but like I got by. And then I went to a state college in Florida that's like, okay, you know, it's an okay school. It's not bad. It's not good. And I was able to skate by, you know, and then I got to law school and I had to work a little bit, but like, to be honest with you, like I didn't really work that hard. Like I worked harder than I ever had before, but I didn't really work that hard. When I was in law school, I was working in the admissions office and my job was to call prospective students and like talk to them about what it was like to be in law school. And this girl, I suppose she was a woman, I don't know at the time, but you know, I talked to this woman and she said, look, I got a lot of friends in medical school and I got a lot of friends in law school. And like, is law school really that hard? Cause like medical school seems really hard, but I never hear the medical school students talking about how hard it is. But I always hear the law school students talking about how hard it is. And I'm like, law school is not hard. You have to just like, you know, you got to do some work or whatever. But I certainly don't think, but it's the type of people, you know, it's those type A personalities. So hustle porn is this sort of like deification of hustle. And it's unhealthy. And like, candidly, like I work too hard. I am a workaholic, you know, what have you. But that shouldn't be celebrated. And as I got into my career, when I was like, okay, you know, now I'm a hustler and I have to hustle and what have you. And other podcasts I've talked about sort of my journey and how like I had no choice but to hustle. I struggled with people who didn't work as hard as me because I see myself as really solidly average in most things. And so if somebody doesn't do what I'm willing to do, they must be below average if I'm average. And so, you know, hustle was one of those things. And I had to learn that like, I'm a pace setter, which means I work really hard but it's okay if somebody doesn't keep up with me. It doesn't mean that they're not doing their job. It just means that they're differently wired and that's okay. As long as they're getting the results that they need to get, they don't have to be me. And that's what I mean by not sort of celebrating this hustle porn, because it's the two sides of the same coin. It's the other side of the coin is I probably work an unhealthy amount. And I probably shouldn't.
Yeah, that kind of self-realization, it's always fascinating to come to different conclusions and then see how we can tweak ourselves. Or
to be clear, I'm not doing anything about it. Yeah. I'm still working just as hard as I've ever worked. I'm working harder than I've ever worked before in the corona times. But like, at least I know that I should think about doing it differently eventually, I guess. But I'm not asking it of other people as much anymore. And that's the kind of the glorification of hustle porn.
Got it. The hustle porn. Yeah, that always stuck with me. I think that's a good way to put it, or the deification of hustle. You've also been quoted as saying your main motivation is to, in your career, is to help businesses, to help people. A lot of people say that. Not a lot of people mean it. It's not genuine. So how is that something that you keep genuine inside of you? And what advice would you give other people to make that not just words, but a reality and be sincere?
Yeah, that's a good question. I did another podcast a couple months ago and it was all about getting to know your customer. And I talked a lot about...
If you wouldn't mind, go ahead and plug that podcast. I really enjoyed and learned a lot from listening to it. So I'd like other people to benefit if they haven't already heard it.
Yeah. It's called you can find it on my LinkedIn, but it's called Really Getting to Know Your Customer. But it's by Betsy Westhafer. Who I believe somebody that was one of the people that I connected you with, and her partner, Tony, I forget his last name. I think it's Grover. I talked on that podcast about putting your customer at the center of the journey. I mean, so like the way that you really help people, really help businesses is by putting the business at the center of the journey, or the person at the center of the journey as a salesperson or what have you. And so realistically, like that's kind of how you can help hold yourself accountable to that. Like, am I solving my problems or am I solving the customer's problems? Am I solving my problems or am I solving, you know, Jamin's problem? If Jamin is not at the center of what I'm trying to solve for, I'm not looking out for him and solving for him. I'm solving for me. And that's not, it's okay. Like, it's okay to be selfish sometimes, certainly. That's kind of how I think about executing it. I think is Jamin at the center of what I'm trying to do? So like when I get off a call with anybody, my goal is to make sure I have things that I can share with them. And so what that does is in that call, I'm thinking through what does Jamin need help with and what can I connect Jamin to? What does this business need help with and what can I connect them to? Not how do I fit what I'm trying to do with what Jamin needs and what Jamin and what the company needs.
I like that. Then, you know, those nuances of where your mind's at and the way you're thinking and framing up and where you're positioning your customer in this story or journey, those nuances, it may not seem like a big thing, but those nuances do come across to other people, whether they inherently recognize it or not. It comes
Thanks,
across.
Man. I
like that. All right, so let's switch gears for a minute then. I think we've learned some good stuff about how you manage yourself, what's made you successful. Now let's see what we can copy from you about where's your focus right now, logistics and transportation during this time. Look, with all due respect to the very serious economic health and other issues related to COVID, it would be very easy for us to talk about the negative side of things. What is a positive that you're focused on that's coming out of this time, specifically in logistics and transportation?
Specifically in logistics and transportation is that folks need to, people are really being insightful about like the vulnerabilities of their business. And I hope that continues on. I mean, we tend to have short memories, particularly in America, but people are really, you know, a net positive here is that folks are looking at their business and being like, you know, oh no, you know, I had one customer who was a big manufacturer of basketballs and like nobody's buying basketballs. So like, you know, now I'm screwed, or, you know, baseball bats or something like that.
I told you should be shooting hoops and supporting them.
No, actually there's like a bike shortage in America right now.
Yes. So
but, you know, looking at their customer segmentation or looking at feeling a bunch of pain as they went to this remote environment of work around what their technology was like and, you know, their exposure to the economic realities of their business and having to make some really difficult choices. You know, not just layoffs, but pay cuts and things like that, that really hurt cash flow. I mean, you know, logistics and transportation is a really cash heavy business. So cash flow becomes a real problem. Looking at who's our real partners, right? Like shippers that turned around and go, sorry, you're on 120 day payment terms. Like, because our cash flow, you know, but some of them are in a tough cash position as well. So looking at all of those things, and I think that could be a net positive, certainly, if people are able to really take that mentality forward into the future.
So what are you focused on? What are you working on right now? What are you excited about and diving into? Because I know you always got something going on.
For me, everything comes back to helping businesses improve in this industry. And I think that we're at a real inflection point. And one of the things I try and focus on is making things easy for people. I believe that good technology and good business strategy isn't one that pushes people past what they're really ready for. It slots into how they work and how they think and how they want to do their job and drives improvement over time without them even necessarily realizing it. So obviously, you know, with Carrier Direct, we're working with companies on exactly that, but I think there's real opportunities here in freight tech to do that. I've started a business with one of my good friends to focus on freight tech and helping get better technology to the market that actually solves people's problems and helping them. So helping the freight tech companies actually message what they're building in a way that people understand what types of improvement they should expect and then helping them get that in front of people and educating the market on sort of like what, you know, why technology is not bad, why it's not scary, why it can help your business, but also that it can't solve every single one of your problems because you have to get better. It's like, you know, I'm a big guy. You guys, you know, you've seen me on pictures. If I do a juice cleanse for 4 days, like I've done recently, I'm not going to be skinny all of a sudden. And the same thing is true with technology. You can't just buy a piece of software and all of a sudden be skinny, right? It's about enabling people to be better. And so spreading that message, I'm doing that with my friend Nick Dangles, and just kind of that's that transformation evangelism. I'm out here. I'm not asking people to change. I'm asking people to keep doing what they're doing and maybe just think a little bit differently about it.
Oh, I like that. A real people approach to technology. And what I heard in there too is the way you'd communicate it and show the story and the journey. That's a lot, employing a lot of empathy, because I think my observation is a lot of times the full journey and the future state of utilizing or even not utilizing certain tech isn't ever really told at the desk level. And so adoption becomes this really messy, ambiguous thing, and it can be very scary.
Yeah, customer success is a train wreck. In logistics, by the way, and like transportation, and that's true of operating companies and providers, but also technology companies, they focus on the how. I mean, it's two things. One, they focus on the how and not the why. They focus on what button to click and not, you know, how to think about improvement. And then the other is not really trying to understand their customers, like we talked about before. You know, transportation providers, if you ask them, you know, what their customers want or need, they talk about the things that, you know, it's the phrase, if you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. They talk about how many they need more trucks and how they need more, you know, they need tracking tools and whatever. They don't actually listen to what their shippers or their, like, and then to the extent that they hear what those people say, they say, oh, well, like, you can't have, like, well, that's not, like, reasonable to ask for. Well, it's what they need. So, like, let's try and figure out how to get it to them. And the same is true of freight tech. With freight tech, it's a lot of, well, like, this tool will help them. Okay, I agree with you that it will help them if this and if this and if this and if this and if this. But these are a lot of problems to solve. And you're asking people to change. I don't, like, that is a recipe for failure. No matter how good your user interface is, no matter how good your workflows are, when you demand people change, especially if you don't tell them the story about why it's better for them, especially if you haven't built and I'm going to use the word relationship, but that's such a loaded term. But if you haven't built the relationship with them, so that, you know, there's trust in your tool that they can change, that they can benefit from doing what you want them to do, they're overtaken by fear yeah. of change, fear of the unknown, fear of being replaced. All of that becomes the story that they tell themselves. And so, yeah, I mean, absolutely, Jamin, like customer success is a freaking train wreck.
Oh man, that's so exciting. And I think so needed. I'm going to call it a niche. It's not even a niche though. That opportunity is so huge and I'm pumped to see the development. Well, cause you're involved in Nick Dangles as well, who you've introduced me to. And if anyone out there is not familiar with who he is, connect with him on LinkedIn. He puts up a lot of practical and tactical content that I enjoy. So going with the down that same line, let's talk robots, AI, conversational UI.
Okay.
Now bear with me on this question because I had to look up conversation.
That's okay.
And so I was like, oh man, I had this thought. Do you think we're going to need to change more the way we think and communicate to match that technology? Or will we get where that technology is going to totally meet up with us?
Yeah. It the whole point of the conversational user interface is it meets you where you are. I mean, I believe that to the extent that you can, you need to meet users and you need to meet people where they are in their journey. And that is applicable across every problem that you're trying to solve. You need to think about it through the lens of meeting them where they are. And as we think about that through the lens of technology, conversational user interface really just means that language is the way that we are most used to engaging with each other. And it should be and can be the way that we engage with software. And so, you know, when I want you to do something, I don't say, hey, Jamin, erase that thing behind you, right? Like, I say, you know, I say that. I don't say, Jamin, scroll over to your right, reach down, pick up the eraser, like go back up, and then, you know, and then move right and left 90 degrees. But that's how we have to interact with software today. You know, conversational user interfaces is saying, let's, like, you know, solve the problems through natural language, which is what we're most used to doing. And yes, it should meet us where we are.
That's very exciting. I love that. All right, well, let's end. I would be remiss. It's in your tagline. I mean, I even have a cat mug today.
Your Garfield. Yeah, there you go.
Garfield, so you are the father of cats. A couple cat questions first. Does somebody have to be a cat or dog person? Can you be a cat and dog person?
You certainly can. I'm not, but you certainly can be.
So what is it about cats that you love?
What I love about cats is you have to like earn their love. Like, you don't just kind of, they don't like love you just because you show up. You have to, you know, you actually have to put something into it to get something out of it. And I think I just find that in life, the things that are the most fulfilling are the things that you have to go and get and do something about, you know, to earn it. So
true. Now, this next question, not a joke. I'm being serious. Actually, right in line with what you said. Are there any lessons or stories that you have utilized in your professional life from observing and interacting with your cats?
Yeah, give people space when they're pissed off.
Hey, that's simple, but that's stinking real.
Especially when you're also pissed off.
Yes. I would have saved myself a lot of heartache applying that several occasions.
Yeah, definitely always look for opportunities to de-escalate the situation.
I love it. Is there any last little nuggets you want to leave with those in the freight, logistics, transportation space, something they could beg, borrow, or steal from your mindset or what you're focused on right now?
I actually think that they can beg, borrow, or steal from your mindset, Jamin. You know, positivity. Oh, thank you. Is the thing that comes through with you. And I think the thing that people struggle with the most in their journey, mindset journey, is even where to start, and that things are hard for them, and that things are easier for the people who are further along in their journey than them. And, you know, Jamin, I met you and learned about you and your positivity before I learned about your mother passing. And when I realized that had happened to you, and I had realized how close in proximity that had happened to you, but how positive you were, and like not just in the words that you say, but in the way that you act, that was unbelievably inspiring to me. Oh, and was proof positive about a lot of the things that you preach and that we talked about today. So I would say, I mean, like, don't listen to me. Listen to Jamin. If you were able to do that and you were able to like get yourself into that mind space, you know, after suffering such a tragic loss like that, it's amazing.
I'll meet you at the, let's listen to my mother, because that's where that comes from for me. So I'll meet you there. And you know what, to play off that just briefly, you know what I think a lot of people miss that if I always try to share is being positive does not mean you do not acknowledge or negativity, or that you ignore negativity or don't have any of it. That's not it at all. In fact, sometimes it's just embracing the negativity or the, you know, hey, this sucks, but here we are, what are we going to do now? And I totally agree.
Yeah. You don't solve problems by ignoring them. You solve problems by tackling them and embracing them. And like,
that's good.
You don't, you know, if you know that, that's how you, that's the only way that, like I was talking earlier about checking in with myself before I, you know, go to my wife and spend time with my wife. I mean, you know, I agree with you, man. Like, I'm sure that you were sad. I'm sure that that was really, really hard, but that's not the same as, you know, that's, you can still be positive through those things. They can be decoupled. Everybody, like, I agree with you, dude, for sure.
Nice. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for lending us a piece of your mind. And if, you know, just take away immediately, I'm sure I'm going to have many percolating through, but just kind of what you ended with there is that we're not powerless in our journey. It's not always going to be great. We're not going to crush everything we come up against, but if we acknowledge it, take action, you know, with a hustle, and just really have some fun with it and work hard and work together, we can really get through it, and not just get through it, but thrive. So thank you so much for that, Ryan. We're really grateful to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And lastly, where can people where's your playing field? Where can people find you and engage with you?
Yeah, I mean, check me out on LinkedIn is obviously the number one place. Any of my content always makes its way over to LinkedIn. So Ryan B. Schreiber on LinkedIn, and I'm happy to connect with anybody and chat whenever.
All right. Thank you so much. Pecarisi, everybody.
Woo! I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I just love learning from people's mindsets. Well, if you enjoyed it, please like, comment, share, all that good stuff. And hey, sincerely, if there was something you didn't enjoy or think we can do to improve, and by we I mean me, please let me know. I truly value your feedback and am so grateful that you listened. Until next time, Pecarisi. Rolling on dubs.